My name is Leonidas, and this is Informed Dissent.
What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 10 of Informed Dissent, the podcast where we push back on the culture of groupthink and challenge the narrative. I hope you're having a great week so far. Our guest this week is a former NFL football player, played offensive lineman for the Detroit Lions, Dallas Cowboys, and the Miami Dolphins. And he's now a professional public speaker, travels around the country speaking on teamwork, leadership, and faith. And he's a warrior for himself, for his family, and for God. Very excited to have him on. His name is Corey Proctor. Corey, welcome to the show, my friend.
Leonidas. Thanks, brother. I just want to say your name 100 times. That's all I want to do.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about you, who you are and what it is that you do, man?
Sure. I live here in Texas. I have my wife, man, she's hardcore. She could, you know, she's got a heart of gold, but she'll stab you in the jugular if you do something wrong. And I think that's most women.
that's a good woman right there.
Awesome, man. We got our two kids. We got a 5-year-old girl, Grace, and our 9-month-old Hank. And so we're lucky, man. We're healthy here in Texas, and we're living life in a great way. What I do, my full time, is my company, Pro Capital Wealth Management. So I'm in the financial space. Work on family and business portfolios. That's my full time. And then you can call it part time, but a big passion of mine is I love speaking into people. And the great thing about that is you get really intimate when you're talking about people's finances. So, you know, there's an opportunity to speak into people in a big way. And so, especially around faith, you get a lot of people that are like, don't bring God or politics into a conversation. And I'm like, look, God's already at the table. You just got to let him have a seat.
Love it.
So I've had crazy conversations where it's flipped from finance to faith and faith to finance and where it's gone to some amazing places. And so I love it. And then on the side, I do these speaking gigs. And you know what? That was something that showed up for my faith. And we can get into this more, but I became a massive consumer when I got into a relationship with God. All of a sudden, fire was lit up in me that wasn't there playing ball, that caused me to all of a sudden, I was insatiable. And I started reading, listening to podcasts, you know, TED Talks, anything I could get my hands on. And, it turned me into an overflowing cup.
Yeah. So,
you know, you and me would be having coffee or eating or something. And you'd be telling me about something that was going on that remind me of a scripture or a message or something or a story that I'd heard, and a piece of revelation would come from it. And that would be able to go through the conversation. All of a sudden it had impact way further than it had before. And so that led all of a sudden to speaking gigs. You need to come talk to my small group, my men's group, to men's conference, to church Sunday, to corporate sales meetings. And you're like, this is weird, man. What's happening right now?
Right. Yeah. That's awesome though, man. I mean, that's how God works though. It's just, this kind of happened that way for me too, with everything that's been going on. I never intended on being some political cultural commentator. I was just putting my ideas out there. And like you said, researching, reading and, you know, doing all this research on my own. And then the response was just crazy and it kind of blew up. So I can empathize with that, man, but I love it. I love that you're doing that. And so are you going all over the country then? Just wherever the wind blows, you're there?
It's I haven't put, besides structuring my talks when I do speaking, I haven't put a ton of effort into that. Just because my full effort goes into my clients and financial business. And so when somebody asks me to speak, I'm like, oh, okay, let's go over this. Let's have a plan of attack first. And what do you want me to talk about? What are your problems? What do you want me to speak to in your organization, your church, or whatever? And so we'll go over that, and then I'll structure my talk.
Gotcha.
So I actually have, you know, if you go to my site, I have a few on there, but in reality, I have a lot, just because of this, a lot you can derive a message off of, but I'll do that. And then, you know, I've flown, most have been around here in Dallas, Fort Worth. But I've had several around the nation, which is why I gave a message at a church in Rochester, New York 2 years ago on Father's Day, which is wild to see all the stuff happening there. Right.
Yeah.
And then, but I've also, right before this shutdown happened, I went to Barcelona and gave a message at a football camp. And you're just like, this is like, I'm at a football camp right now, you know? And so, and then before that, Gateway Church is a large church down here in DFW. They took me to Israel to speak at their men's conference over there.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
I mean, it's been wild. One wasn't a speaking gig, but led to one was when I was with Chris Long in Africa, raising money for wells over there. And we climbed Kilimanjaro, and which led to whole series of events after. And it's just like, you're just blown up. You're like, this, none of this is me. Like, I have to walk through these things. This is my actionable portion of this partnership. But like,
right,
there's things that are happening in my life I can't explain. All right.
Right. And yeah. So that's awesome, man. Great. I love it. I love it. So, let's talk about your sports expertise a little bit. You know, things are obviously crazy in the world right now. I don't know if you noticed, but things are a little volatile, and we've seen politics just really fuse itself with sports, and athletes all over the place have become political activists now. Like, everybody is a political activist now. When I was growing up, I don't remember it ever being like this yet. In my whole lifetime, I don't remember being, you know, for athletes to be so involved with politics. And you and I were about the same age. So, you know, when you were playing, was the political atmosphere like this? I mean, was politics even a subject in the locker rooms?
You know, we talked about some things for sure. Because when you're talking about taxes, right, you especially, you know, as a professional athlete, you're in the highest tax bracket all the time. And so when you're talking about such a big chunk of money getting taken from your paycheck, it's bound to come up somewhere. And so we've talked about it a little bit, but it wasn't an activist kind of mentality. It was just a conversationalist type mentality. And so
you weren't going marches or like,
no, that's what's so wild about all this.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. I mean, now we had, I don't want to say there were some comments when Obama was elected in, because first black president, which I'm like, hey, I can appreciate that. Right. But there wasn't any sort of hardcore stance or animosity I didn't feel going on in here. Now, this is just one man's viewpoint, but I didn't see. But I also, just to be honest, like, I wasn't crazy involved in politics. It's not to say I'm crazy involved now, but I watched on a way closer scale than I ever did before.
Yeah.
But I don't remember a whole lot of that. There wasn't much going on then. At least it wasn't so loud for everybody to hear.
Yeah, I get that sense as well. And, you know, because I played sport, I didn't play professionally, but I played in college, and, you know, we didn't have that same, it just wasn't there. So this is a brand new thing that, you know, turning athletes into political activists. So, I mean, what do you think about it? What do you think about the intersection of politics and sports? Because you can't even watch ESPN without getting political messages now, you know? So we have all these athletes and celebrities that have taken to be, like I said, political activists. So what's your take on it? What's your opinion about it all?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with somebody using their platform, right? God's giving you a voice. God's giving you this kind of place to use this to be a leader. I don't mind that at all. The portions that I don't like are the forcing of the leagues or the owners or the people that are employing you to do something. All right. This is, if somebody were coming to my company, this is my company. Now, if I value you as an employee, I'm definitely going to listen to you. If I respect you and you earn that respect in a big way, I'm going to listen to you. Right. But at the end of the conversation, like, this is led by, this company is going to be led by my leadership, right? I got to pour into you, and there's great conversations about leading when you're not in charge, and that's great. But I love having this conversation with young players, because it's so easy to get caught up into not just the politics of our government, the politics of your work, right? And so, you know, like if you're my coach, Leonidas is my coach, and we're not getting along, like you got something against me all of a sudden, right? And so I got to find some reason that you don't like me. And so this happens all the time in relationships, but especially in work, or especially when you're dealing with egos, we got them when we're playing, is you don't like me, or we're disagreeing, you have something personal against me. And so now it builds up this place where you're real jaded to be where you're at. So you see it with other players that are like, man, I need to be traded. I want off this team. This is garbage. I hate this place, whatever. And I'm telling, like, I love talking to young guys. It's the wrong place to be. And here's the thing. You ask any coach, they can count on one hand how many times this has happened. If I got to realize, if I want to win, I want to make a Pro Bowl, I want to do as well as I can, I got to execute my goal here. And you're my coach, I got to convince you that I'm on your team. And if I can't do that, so like, and I tell guys to do this, and this is where I say coaches can count on one hand how many times this has ever happened. I tell guys, listen, you got to be on their side. You got to be on their team. They got to know that you're on their team. And then you got to walk through those actions. So I'm like, you need to go in and talk to him and have a plain conversation. Say, hey, Coach Leo, man, and things might be going good or bad, but I'm like, Coach, I want to kill it for you. I want to be a Pro Bowl, personal goals. I want to make the Pro Bowl. I want to start. I want to do all these things, and I want to go kill it for you. But I know in order for me to do that, I got to do things the way you want me to do them. And I go, how can I be on your team? Or what do you see in me that can make that happen the fastest or in the best way? And I'm like, you immediately get buy-in from your coach to be on your team. And so what the tough thing is we always get in this dance where like, we never have that conversation ever. So now you're trimming back my play time, you're trimming back my practice reps, or you're trimming back anything, whatever. And now I'm like, you don't get me. Right, we build it up in our own head, in our heads a lot of the time, and I think the same thing translates over to the politics of the government. Is we don't have real conversations with anybody, so we build it up in our head. But like, they're like, you have this against me, or you blame it on some other exterior motive, and like race or something. And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? I want you to win. No coach wants any player to lose.
Right, right. Yeah.
But when you have that, all of a sudden you start realizing that if I'm worth fighting for and my family's worth fighting for, this guy and his family are worth fighting for. And that's a different perspective.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. It's, and just culturally, it's just a breakdown in communication and people just not listening to each other and then ascribing whatever intentions that they want to, or what makes sense to their particular perspective to the other person. And I talk a lot about something in psychology called the hostile attribution bias. And what that basically is just attributing hostile intentions to other people without any evidence. So, you know, somebody will say something to you, or you mentioned like the coach trimming reps or trimming playtime. And, you know, you're going to, if you're going to use the hostile attribution bias, you're going to immediately assume that that the coach or whoever it is has hostile intentions toward you. And we see that across the board with so many different things, where somebody will say something or do something, maybe you disagree with it, but then you immediately attribute hostile intentions to that thing. Like you said, maybe it's race, maybe it's gender, maybe it's whatever. And there's no discussion to be had. There's no conversation. There's no questions. It's just, this is what it is. And it's very dogmatic in the way that it's approached. And I think that's one of the biggest problems in our society, is that we're not talking to each other.
Oh, it's huge. Well, what happens when you tell everybody they can't work? Where's the enemy's playground is to get you alone. If I can get you alone in your own head and thoughts and plant all kinds of negative seeds in you, I wrote that down, by the way, hostile attribution bias. That's really good. Like, I can get you into that mode real fast. And this happens. What does it happen? When you break off by yourself, you're going to find somebody, you're going to find three friends right away. They're going to reinforce that negative place.
Yep. Get you in a loop.
Right. And they're like, you're right, man. That guy's a jerk. You're right. That guy doesn't deserve you. This guy's trying to do this. You need to do something about that. And all of a sudden, it just, you just raised up a bunch of angst that, what does that do? It causes you to start popping off in bad ways. And so that, and that just furthers the divide.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And you know, just, we have an issue where, like I was talking about the dogmatic stuff, and the, I guess we could look at the athletes and the platforms that they have, which I don't have a problem with athletes speaking out either. I'm an actor and I talk about politics all the time. So I obviously don't want people in the entertainment business or sports business to be silenced. But I think that what people have the most problem with and what is causing the most issue is that communication and like people not really, I guess, using their platform, using their celebrity as if that gives them more credibility and that people should listen to them because of who they are and not exactly what they're saying. They haven't really researched or haven't really studied the issue, but they're coming out and say, well, I'm LeBron James, so you have to listen to what I'm saying. And, you know, speaking of, like, it reminds me of Laura Ingraham when she told LeBron to shut up and dribble. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Which I mean, people turned that into a race thing, but it really wasn't. I mean, she was basically saying that, look, you don't know what you're talking about, so just stick to what you're good at. I mean, so she wasn't wrong, right? She wasn't, I mean, if you don't know what you're talking about and you have this massive platform and this massive bullhorn that you can just, you know, put whatever ideas out into the universe that you want to, and millions of people will hear them. You have some kind of responsibility to know what you're talking about. So I think that's what turns most people off when athletes and celebrities come out and they push this stuff. So what do you think about that?
You know, 100%. I'm like, listen, I don't want to take away from your voice, but at the same time, have enough whereabouts to say, I don't know everything. And right. And I'm like, this is where I'm feeling. Let's talk about it. Like, I feel like this is where we're headed in this direction. Don't pop off like this is some emotional grab. And that's what happens so much is listen, we're dealing with a real weird conversation in America right now where, all right, one side is talking about like, you're not listening. Right. And then you have the other side is like, well, you're not listening. And so, all right, if we're going to do that, you have to, if you want to be heard, you got to be able to listen to somebody else too. And so this is like the kneeling with the flag. I get it. Black lives matter. Of course they matter. It's like almost a dumb question to ask. What are you talking about?
Right,
of course they matter.
Exactly.
Anybody who says they don't should go fly a kite. Right. And so you're like,
right.
But anybody who takes a knee, and I get it, it's controversial and it brings a ton of attention to the situation and all these things. But look, I'm talking about both my grandpa served. My grandpa flew over 200 missions in the Korean War. And so this guy used to practice. I got an old picture of him practicing crash landings in old fields. And I'm like, who practices crash landings?
Crash landings. That's crazy.
And so, you know, these are people respect. So when people look at the flag, and I get there's lots of different emotions, but if you want me to hear, people look at that flag and they see that thing draped over coffins.
Right.
People look at that flag and they see family members. They see people who have died for this country or given so much to this country, regardless of their views. And so if you want to be heard, you got to be able to respect the other side of the aisle. And I get it, the same they do. And it's not about that. And I'm like, okay, but you got to see, this is why the Dixie Chicks don't have a career right now. Okay. Because they stepped on that American country audience.
Right.
When Toby Keith was like, don't come at me.
Yeah.
And you're like, you want to stir up the dog, you're going to get a fight. And so it's the same kind of mentality that why there's so many supporters for Trump is because you're stirring up this dog mentality. Is like, listen, don't come at me. I'm just trying to live my life, but right. I'm just trying to pay my taxes and build the American dream of what I want it to be.
Yeah.
And when you limit that, or you start potentially disrespecting, I know they're not trying to disrespect, but like, but is what you're potentially doing is when you all some people see is you standing on the grave of their grandpa, mm-hmm. the grave of their grandma. And when you're trying to have a conversation with me, I'm going to be like, hold on one sec, Leo, step you over here. Just off this spot. All right. I just want to, you know, I don't want you, you know, it's just a bad place to be. I know you're not trying to do that. I just don't want you here. Right.
Right.
And, yeah. And be like, hey, all right, now talk to me. What's up?
Yeah.
And so, but the problem is nothing gets people's attention if you don't do anything controversial right now. And so that's the controversy behind it. And so now it's this big thing. And I mean, look, I don't like it. If I were in the NFL today, I would stand 100% because my family is what I'm representing.
Right.
And if that's your choice, that's your choice, man. But I wish you want to have a real conversation about it. You don't have to do that to get my attention. You can just tap me on the shoulder and say, well, hey, come on.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And so, I mean, it's so difficult because it seems like one side is willing to listen to an extent. And then there's another side that's, you know, we're going to shove this down your throat and beat you over the head with it. And, you know, it's very rigid. So it's hard to find that middle ground and hard to find that commonality. And I've said that many times, like we need to, as a country, find our commonality, what we have in common, or else we're going to tear each other apart. We have to go back to the ideals of this nation and figure out what it is that we share, what it is that we have in common, so that we can come together, and then we can talk about how to solve these problems. But as long as we're so divided and not willing to have that conversation at all or any discussion, then I think the country's in trouble. I think that we have to find something, some way to come together and build some kind of unity.
Well, I mean, there's one thing that I love to preach on or share on big time is that your emotions are indicators. They're not dictators. Right. And so many people in this country have zero foundation that they're standing on right now. They don't know what they're about. They don't know what they stand for.
It's all emotion. Yeah.
And because that's the case, the emotion becomes the replacement. Mm-hmm. And when the emotion is a replacement, now it's just based on how I feel by the day or the minute, not by what I actually stand for, or what I choose to value. And when that happens, you know how that is. I might've woke up on the wrong side of the bed that morning. I might just be hungry.
Right.
And all of a sudden I'm flipping the table at you because you said one thing that sounded half weird to me. And I didn't even check you to see if what my interpretation of that was correct.
Right.
And that's what goes on, is like the immediate assumption that I know exactly what you're talking about. And so instead of, and this is where I'm like, listen, guys, know what you're about before that and check your own emotions in that. Because when I can check my emotions, a healthy person or a mature person, I can come to you. If you said something weird or texted something that was weird or group messaged something weird, I can come to you and I'd be like, Leo, what felt like this is where you were going with that. Is that right? Am I wrong or am I right on that?
Right.
And you can check me right away. Right. And maybe you went to the emotional place and then maybe my assumption might've been right, but it might've been completely wrong most of the time. And you're like, nah, that's not what I meant. This is what I meant. And I'm like, oh, I got nothing to be ticked off about.
Right. Yeah.
So that's old Key and Peele.
Yeah.
Right there with the texting.
The texting, right.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to go? You want to go?
Yeah. Sure, bro.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Bro. Oh, man. Yeah, you're right, man. That's really what it is. And let me transition into Amy Coney Barrett. You know, this whole thing that we're talking about is coming out. There are people heavily criticizing her. And, you know, what I really want to get at is this open disdain for Christianity and this completely, you know, this complete misunderstanding of who Christians are, what Christianity is, what our intentions are, you know, what her intentions would be on the Supreme Court. And it's just completely warped and twisted. And, you know, the criticism is just wild. But, you know, what's crazy about our society is that it's popular and socially acceptable to mock and hate Christians and Christian beliefs, right? Now, First Amendment, I'm not saying that people can't do that or shouldn't be able to, but at the same time, if you made the same kind of attacks toward, say, Islam, the mob would come after you, right? That's not acceptable at all. So there is a clear double standard in how people approach these things. And it's interesting that our culture has moved into this supposed secular anti-religion position, but only with Christianity. Right? It still treats other religions as sacred. And we see that every day. So now you're a Christian guy. So what are your thoughts on how Christianity is negatively perceived in our society?
Well, first off, before I go into that, the RBG thing. So everybody's blowing up about filling the seat right now, right?
Yeah, right.
And you probably know this, but for anybody listening, what's interesting about this, 22 times, this is the 23rd time in history this has happened, a Supreme Court justice seat came open in the year of an election, right?
Mm.
How many times, the previous 22 times, how many times in that election year has that seat been filled?
Right. Every time, right?
100% of the time. So this blow up that's happening right now is complete facade. Complete facade right now. So this is a distraction against whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, it's all, well, I mean, it's political.
Yeah.
It's all political because everybody was saying different things in 2016. I mean, it's just
yep.
like literally everybody was saying different things. So yeah, it's all political. But yeah, I mean, I just see, I mean, what gets me the most is the animosity. That's what gets me. It's not just that it's political, but it's that it's so acerbic, it's so hateful, and it's so vitriolic. It's in these people, they want to hurt you. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to say it. They want you to hurt, and they do not want any of this. And I mean, people are threatening riots, threatening violence. These are journalists that are getting on Twitter and saying this stuff. So, you know, people are losing their minds over this. So it's not a normal reaction like, oh yeah, we shouldn't do this. It's like, no, we're going to do all this terrible stuff if this happens. So, and you know, it's not just part of it is Trump, you know, part of it is that. And then part of it is the Christian conservative thing. So yeah, so if we circle back to that, what is going on? Why do people hate Christianity so much to the point where they feel like that they can openly criticize it, where they don't do that with other religions?
One, it's a majority, right? Everybody has had an experience or can relate in some fashion to that experience with their background or running into a Christian. And so part of that to me, I get it. Because we have a lot of hypocrite Christians, right? We got a lot of hypocritical Christians that are just trying to throw the Bible. But it's not the whole thing, but part of it, I get it, because there's a lot of Bible thumpers that are just trying to throw the book at you and be like, you need to live this way or else you're going to hell. And I'm like, man, brother, if you're real about what God has done in your life in a big way and brought you from death to life, you're going to get a whole lot more people listening than running away. All right. Then you just trying to tell them what to do all of a sudden. In the same way, when he's speaking to any Christians out there, people don't know the battle of Christmas, right? The serpent and how the devil tried to come down and consume Jesus after he was born. But that's when Michael, the archangel, actually fought a whole war and defeated the serpent. Why, how did he do it? By the blood of Jesus and by the word of his testimony. The word of your testimony is your life story. And so people don't get, I'm like, it's not going to work if I sit here and tell you what to do all day long and you have to listen to do this and this and this. No, but if I can relate or you get impacted by a piece of my own revelation, that's going to carry way more power into a situation
right. That
might affect you. So that's what I'd leave with believers or Christians today. So I get a portion of that. The other side of that, I think it's because it's been the majority for so long. It's so easy to attack the big one that we see.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
easy to attack the big guy that we see. And so, if that's the most prevalent and that's the most visible, go at it all the time. Cause you think you can get over me. Well, it's not, it's still the building of the enemy that's going on in your head. And you're like, this isn't some big, bad giant to fight right now, man. Most Christians are the same way. They want to live their life. They want to go build their life here in America. And so they just want the same kind of freedoms that everybody else wants.
Right.
As long as it doesn't hurt anybody or infringe on any other rights, then let them have it. But there's a giant bastardization of Christianity that's gone on. from one side of the aisle, that it's not equal. And that's what's wild. It's like, man, you like the rage, I wish that would be equal across the board, but you definitely have a rage against very specific places.
Yeah.
And so it's a wild fight to see, but it's also, you know, I kind of get reminded of the level of maturity or health in one person's life by how offended or how emotional they get in any sort of response. And I'm like, you know, if you say something, you got somebody flies off the handle immediately. And I walked into a restaurant here yesterday. Okay. We went out to eat after church. We're walking into a restaurant and we're a little more loose. We got a mask mandate here in Texas, but we're a little more loose with it. If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Downtown Dallas is a little more like downtown LA versus Fort Worth. This is more cowboy country area.
And
I walked into this place more towards Dallas and I got stopped hardcore at the door. I'm like, you got to have a mask if you're going to be in here, sir. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go outside. Just know if you come in here, you got to have a mask.
Wow. Like,
okay. But it's like, I know by how intense you come at me about a situation usually is a pretty good indicator about your maturity there.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you, man. Now, I know you became a Christian after football, right? And is that right? Did I get it right?
I was a believer before, but I believed in God, but I didn't really care.
Okay. I gotcha. So what was your transition? What was the transition? Like, how did you get to a point where, God became the center point of your life?
Man, there's some pretty big things that happened. I was raised Mormon. And so I kind of operated in that. I was in and out of the church growing up. And so I operated in that kind of fashion. Like, you know, so if you had to pray, if I prayed or was asked to do any of that, I'd pray in that fashion. And so, taught a very specific way to do that. And so, but what happened is football cut, in my eyes, got cut short. I still had more left in the tank. Mm-hmm. So now I'm dealing with an identity issue and, or a fight against transition. I didn't want to do this. And then really the big kicker was I'm middle of three boys and my younger brother lost his son to cancer. And right before his second birthday. And we had our daughter during that time. And the first time they met was at St. Jude. When the doctor said, take him home and just go be with him. And so we went like a lot of people would know death. There's a lot of things that surround death, but opinions is definitely one of them, and how you should be doing this and how you should be doing that. And so we had some massive craters form in our family. You know, didn't talk to my older brother for a long time. And so these things happen, but Casey and I, my younger brother and I, we took a real FU approach to God. And yeah, we believe you're there. There's this higher power, but I don't need you. And we ended up, sometime later, one of my close friends, Blake Bevan, who is a pitcher, a first round pick for the Rangers out of Texas here, him and his wife were over playing cards. They were over at our house and they invited us to go to Milestone Church here in Keller, Texas, which is non-denominational. And now this is more, it was more production with the band and worship and something that I wasn't really into. And I was pretty judgmental of before that, and walked in, man, I got my baby girl and got my wife. She was the only reason I went, right? So she's the one who wanted to go. And so I'm like, I don't want to do this. But she's like, well, I'm going to go to 11 a.m. service. You can come if you want. And just drops the mic and walks off. But we end up doing this. We go into church and I walk in with full wall up to God. You know, I'm like kicking away the pastors, anybody who's trying to be really inviting and nice to me. I'm like, I came in with this attitude, and it was about second or third worship song before God totally lays the vision of my nephew on me, and he's sitting on his lap, and I didn't hear anything audible, but I got this overwhelming feeling of I got him.
Mm.
He's good.
Wow.
And I share, guys, I'm like, listen, that wasn't like, hey, I give my life to Christ right then, but it brought the wall down enough time to come back the next week.
Wow.
And I share this because Romans, it talks about to gain faith, you have to be around the word and the word of Christ. Mm. And so all of a sudden I'm in an environment where God can speak to me, speak with me. I'm in an environment where he says, where there are two or more that are gathered in my name, there I am.
Yeah.
And so now we're in a place of worship designated to experience God. And all of a sudden I can encounter the Spirit in a huge way. And that might sound corny to people, but all of a sudden I'm in a men's development group. That's where my consumption started at an insane rate. That's where I started reading leadership books like crazy, financial books like crazy. And I started taking a real hold of my life. And you could think like, hey, I was an NFL player, professional football player. You can think this guy's got it figured out.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
Yeah.
How many guys go broke? How many guys get divorced, right? How many guys have ruin after their
right.
careers?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I got into this place where, man, all of a sudden, that's where I tell you, I became this overflowing cup where, you know, God was trying to get me this whole time, but he essentially created this great character through football. All these good, I knew how to work with a team, take coaching. I was a hard worker, where I was supposed to be, when I was supposed to be there. I was smart. I rarely made mental errors. I was technically a fantastic worker. I was the kind of guy you wanted, right? But all of a sudden, when I came under alignment with him, now he was like, I'm going to turn you into a leader.
Yeah.
Watch this.
Now I can use you. Now, here we go.
Yes.
Watch what I do. Yeah, I love that,
right.
man. And yet, that's a big focal point for your speeches, right? Like finding identity in Christ. Because like you said, when you play sports your whole life and you make it to the level that you made it and then get cut short from an injury, you could have spiraled, man. You could have really lost your way if you put your whole identity in that. And that happens to so many people. Like you were saying, like people that put their whole identity in something and then when it's gone, then who are you? Like what's left? And so it is amazing what can happen when you stop putting your identity and your worth in and your happiness in things that are temporary, things that ultimately don't matter in the grand scheme of things. And you know, and to bring it back to the Christianity hate thing, I mean, it's wild that people do hate Christianity so much, because the basic tenets of Christianity are based in love. Yeah, the commandments can be funneled into love God and love your neighbor. And yeah, if we actually followed those ideals, if we would treat each other like brothers and sisters in Christ and see our identity that way, you can imagine how much better the world would be, you know, if our identities would not be based in things that drive enmity, but in things that drive love and unity. But we don't do that. So, and we denigrate Christianity instead. And
you're correct, but I think a lot of people have a screwed up or a messed up sense of what love is.
Oh yeah, that's a great point. Great
right?
point.
My if I love you as a brother, that doesn't mean I let you go wreck your life in any way you possibly want to. If
right.
you're married, I'm not going to sit here and let you watch you cheat on your wife because you feel like it's the right thing to do. Just because I love you, I don't want you to feel bad. No, accountability is part of love. And if I love you, that means I make the effort enough to take you away from the bad situation, to one, punch you in the face if I have to, and you same to me if I'm sitting here acting a fool that would not, my wife wouldn't appreciate, right? Or my kids wouldn't appreciate. Or if I've decided what values I'm about in my life, you say, this isn't you. This isn't you. Like when you talk about Christianity, God talks about, I prepared a place for you beside me through Christ next to me in the heavenly realms.
Mm-hmm.
That means you have a reserved spot and an inheritance. I mean, a massive deal to get. And so when you realize that kind of power, like you start thinking in a different way, like, hold up, like I know the battle's won. I just got to make sure I'm doing my part in this.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, like when you or I start acting a fool, we can correct each other. Like, nah, that's not you. That's not you, man. That's none of God in that.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's not you. That's not with your wife. That's not with you. Is that what you want your kids to see? And so all of a sudden you're like, no, you're right. And I got close friends that I work out with, that I hang with all the time, that we do that with each other. And we check. My own wife does it to me. All right. People, guys don't understand your wife is supposed to challenge you. And she'll tell me you're acting like a jerk right now. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm like, yes, you are. And I got to stop because it's them. Right. It's somebody close to me. I'm like, really? And they go, yeah. All right. Yeah. And I'm sorry. And so like, all right, now I got to take a beat. Why? Because I respect you or respect the weight that I've given this person in my life to be there. And so now we have this accountability. And now that's where the iron sharpens iron comes in. You can hold me accountable. And then I can hear I know your story well enough where it's affected me so much that I've expanded my own territory on this planet.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you're absolutely right. 100%. Because like you can tell that you love somebody if you care, if you're putting that, you know, that accountability on people. And God does that to us all the time. Like it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like he brings that accountability on us, and that shows that he loves us. And I always use the analogy that we don't let our kids play in the street when cars are around. You know, we don't let them play in busy traffic. And it's not that we don't want them to go have fun. It's because we love them and we don't want them to get hurt. So like we do things that they don't want us to do in order to keep them safe because, you know, and that's love. So, you know, it's not always, like you said, it's not always letting people do whatever they want to do. It is telling the truth in love. And, you know, like, listen, man, like you said, that is not you. That is not correct. Like, we need to pull this back. And that is love because you care enough to tell them that. And so I'm with you, man. I like it. All right. So what's next for you, man? What's going on with you? What do you got planned?
What do I got planned? Well, shoot, this, I mean, as far as business is concerned, this has been an awesome time for me. So I'm trying to keep that momentum going. So that's, you know, people, the same thing. Social media, other areas try to distract. And I want to hopefully bring truth to a situation. And so, an identity. So what I want is I try to bring that into situations, one, into my clients and keep that goal going for my family and my business. And then if I can speak into their life at the same time, it's a huge deal. And I love doing that, especially during a time like this, because you talk about 40% of our nation was paycheck to patient, paycheck to paycheck, doesn't have $500 in the bank for an emergency. And what's the number one cited reason for divorce, or one of the top cited reasons for divorce? Money. And so, or one of the top cited reasons for anxiety in our nation, period. Finance, money. And really, people don't understand the business of their own life. And so this is another a symptom of a bigger problem. I'm like, you don't dive into the problem. Guess what? You're left to somebody else solving your problems. And that's when you let somebody else, who's going to usually take up the effort to do that? Not a lot of people, unless you're paying them. So that's the tough thing about it is in this, this is what I made a poster, a video about this the other day is I've had a lot of people talk about, like, you know, must be nice to be rich. Must be nice to play pro football, born with a silver spoon, or life handed to you on a silver platter. And I'm like, if you have the same behaviors that were destructive before you won the jackpot, or won the lottery, you're going to end up in the same place in just a matter of time anyways.
And that happens all the time. Yeah, that happens all the time. People win the lottery and then it's gone within like a year. Or 2 years, whatever. Because they don't change their mentality. They don't change their ideology. They keep living the same way they did before, and then, you know, it's out. So
I love speaking into people. I had a conversation with somebody this morning going through a tough deal, laid off from their work through this COVID deal, hasn't found a job still, and trying to help navigate their finances, right? Really pointing their guns to what kind of debt they should pay off or how they should manage it before they get a job. And really, you know, and what's tough about it is what stems from that. If we're, you know, speaking politically, there's one side that really argues against the victimization of our nation and basically says, man, you're in this place because you know, Jeff Bezos is making too much money off of you.
And, right, exactly.
And I'm like, and people love that, right?
Yeah.
So they'll buy into that. Same thing. You think you have that same thought process. You have three people to reinforce that and say you're right. And so, but that's not the case at all. You really want to hang around somebody. This was not too long ago. I had a quote from Dave Ramsey that I really like. They did a study on millionaires. 79% of all millionaires inherited $0.
Yep. I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I had a buddy who quoted, he's really big into the race talks right now. And I love him to death. He's a pastor down here. And he actually broke it down pretty good. And he said of that, I think of those long-term wealth, like basically in their 70s, currently in their 70s, that went through the civil rights movements and were during segregation and some of that stuff, but 8% were black. And he kind of made the comment. He was like, you know, looks like there was a head start on one side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I could see that for sure. But what the victim thinks is this is garbage. You got it over me.
Yeah.
Right. And this is unfair. But what the victor or the person who's really forward think about is like, man, I want to talk to that 8%.
Yeah.
I'm like, you want to talk about some dudes or some people that went against the odds and got it?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk to those guys. I'm like, what, you know, and so if those guys can beat that, those guys can beat anything. And so I want to go take up their mentality.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, everything in our society seems to be so relative. It's so relative. We're always looking elsewhere. You know, it's not about what I'm doing or what I have. Like, it's about what I have in relation to what you have. And then that drives so much unhappiness and so much division and hostility. I forget which comedian it was, but he said that the only time that you need to look in your neighbor's basket is to make sure that they have enough. You shouldn't be looking in your neighbor's basket to see if they have more than you. And we teach that to our kids, right? Like, our kids understand that. They understand that very well. But for some reason, as adults, we're like, no, this guy has $1 billion and I don't. So therefore life is unfair. And like, you know, even though you have a pretty decent life and you're like, things are going okay for you. But since he has more, then all of a sudden it's an issue. So now, I mean, I don't know. Is that a Western culture thing? I don't know. Like it's an American thing, but like we need to get away from that because it's causing all kinds of issues.
It's so crazy stuff. So there's the bastardization of that. You have like AOC and you have these other people on that side of the ball that are just saying they don't deserve it and nobody deserves that. Well, I'm sitting there. I'm like, you need to pay your, right. What does that mean? Or pay your fair share. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, hold on, fair share. Right now, the top income bracket is 37%, right? The tax bracket is 37%. That means anybody's filing jointly, who's married filing jointly, basically makes over anything over $500,000, they're paying 37% on their taxes, which is the lowest it's been in a long time.
Yeah.
All right. When I was playing, it was 42.5%. So there's a lot of
that's
money.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's crazy.
A lot. A lot of money.
That's a lot. Jeez.
So, okay. 37%. Just to give you a clear, anybody who falls into that tax bracket, those people pay 70% of our federal income tax.
Right. Yep.
So when you talk about fair share.
Yeah. How much more do they need to pay? Yeah. And then we have, I forget the percentage, but there's a large section of our society that pays no income tax at all. Right. So you have these people,
the lowest level.
Right. So yeah. You have this group that pays 70%, and then there's a large group of people. And I wish I had the percentage off the top of my head, but it's a large percentage that pays none at all. And so what's the fair share? So it's all relative and it's all subjective and it's all political. It's hard. Well, all right, man. But before I leave you here, I did want to talk about a quote that you tweeted recently. Well, I guess it was something that you said, so I'm quoting you, but I absolutely loved it. I retweeted it. It was awesome. But what you were basically talking about was that each of us have unique gifts and, you know, we shouldn't worry so much about what other people's gifts are. We should focus on our gifts. And, you know, it reminded me of, the whole idea of the fish trying to climb the tree. Right. No, which I think is attributed to Albert Einstein. I don't know if he said that or not, but it's a great quote anyways. But like, yeah, the fish isn't equipped to climb the tree. Like, he has different skills and abilities. So being unable to climb the tree doesn't reduce the fish's worth. It just means that its value is placed elsewhere. Right. So I think that's what you were getting at with that quote, right?
It's, we have, there's, and look, I love where we're at. There's nothing in our laws that says anybody is unequal right now.
Right.
Everybody is equal to go pursue the life that they want. So we have, there's a big narrative, right, where there's gender or racial inequality right now. Mm-hmm. And so, or some sort of minority or some sort of inequalities everywhere, right? Well, we're not made to be equal.
Right.
Like, freedom speaking, yes, we're all created equal. And you can go after the same things all that you want, go after. But the problem is when you start thinking from that respect, you're thinking like, well, you got this over me. You're in this position over me. I'm like, people don't realize that I don't have the same assignment as you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you're born with gifts that are completely unique to you. And when I don't understand my gifts, which is most typical here, I'm going to stare at yours and look at you, the way you're performing in your gifts, and see how you're on social media. You're talking to all these people. You have this podcast going, man, you got life together, man. And this is like, hold up, man, this is garbage. This is unequal right now. I should be having this role, not you.
Yeah.
And so people get so bound up with this when they need to realize, like, no, you have a completely different set of skills and abilities that you are made for than I was. And okay, we might have some similarities. Absolutely. For sure. Right. You can ask podcast hosts, you get people playing football. All right. But even people who are in the same position, they do it different.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the thing is I want people to realize is listen, I'm not made to be the same as you. You want a big, actually, I think I put it out there today. You want a giant sign of maturity is if you can celebrate somebody's success without downgrading theirs at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a huge piece. That was actually our message. One of our message at church this weekend is how many times have you heard from somebody like he was born with it?
Yeah.
Right. Or that she slept her way to the top or he, right. You know, he doesn't deserve that. I'm like, well, and all of a sudden we make all these excuses. I'm like, no, man, I that was a big piece. When I got in my faith, all of a sudden people's giftings, those became way more apparent.
Yeah.
And when you see somebody performing in their gift set, you're like, man, I'm like, give me a hug. Right.
Yeah, right.
And now it's not like a jealous rage. Like, I'm jealous. I want to get on your level.
Right.
Like, this is awesome.
Hey, help me get there too. Yeah. Yeah. That's.
Yeah. And then when you appreciate that, it's a totally different dynamic in the conversation. And this happens with people. Like you walk into someone's house.
Mm-hmm.
What are you saying about the house when you walk in? Are you even like, dang, man, you're more rich. You're rich. Like, I didn't think you were this rich, you know?
Right.
Or are you walking in like, man, you got, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
You got a beautiful home.
Blessed.
And this is awesome that you, yeah.
Yep.
And like, you have definitely worked for this and you got an incredible family. Like, it's really awesome to see that.
Yeah.
And it just, you got to be proud of that. And so like when you cut, that is a totally different conversation.
Yeah. It's all about mentality. It's all about, it's all about how you approach it mentally. And, you know, I study psychology a lot and there really is power in positive thinking. I mean, we know that as Christians anyways, but like if you wake up in the morning and you have nothing but negative thoughts, like the odds that your day is going to be terrible is astronomical. But I mean, you wake up and you're like, yeah, let's do this, you know, positive affirmations. Here we go. I'm going to dominate today. Then your day is going to go much better. We can't control everything. You know, we can't control everything that happens to us, but we can control how we respond to what happens to us. So that's the big takeaway for me. So I love that, man. Good stuff. All right. Well, where can people find you, man? How can they support what you're doing?
Check me out, CordProctor.com. If you want to check out the financials, it's procapitaltx.com. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, at Corey Proctor, Facebook, all those good places, man. LinkedIn. I love to connect and talk with people. I started following you. I think I saw somebody like or comment on your thing. So I started following your Twitter, and that's how we got connected. But it's a powerful tool, man. And it's a tool to be used. Yeah. Either you're using it or you're getting used by it. And so
I like that.
I love how we were able to connect, because I love what you're putting out there. I vibe with it a lot. Come talk. I always encourage people to talk to me. If you got a question, even if you're ticked off of me, I don't mind. Talk to me. And
yeah, communication, man. That's what we need, that communication. Yeah. I love it, man. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you very much, man. Said, so we're ending all these episodes where I ask all the guests the same question. So you get the question. What do you love about America, and what makes our country great?
Man, I love America because I have the freedom to go build my life how I want. I have a home. I have my family. Every action or everything is laid out in front of me, and it's just up for me to go get it. And that's what's incredible. And the greatest thing about that is it was built on people that on a foundation of something that allows it to expand. And so, like, our Constitution, right, might be made by imperfect men, but it was amendable. It was perfect for us. We can change it. It was awesome. And so I love that because it gives us the ability to have this conversation and gives me freedoms to protect my family in a big way. And so, and whether that's through prayer or the Second Amendment. So I'm,
I love it, man. I love it.
I love America. And we take so much for granted, and I apologize to Gilmore, but like,
no,
I took a trip to Africa with Chris Long, and I got to see how primitive other places are in this world.
Mm.
And I got to see people who are literally hunting for their food daily. And the ones that don't, they starve, they go thirsty, or they get raped or killed in the process. And I'm sitting here worried about how many grams of protein are in my protein,
right.
You know?
Right.
And I'm like, so I'm, what I love is this country is we come from an amazingly blessed place that we can live free. We can go to work. We can make an income. We can provide for our family and make it as big as we want to and build our kingdom.
I love it, man. I love it. And, you know, I do wish that more people could have that experience so they could realize just what they're taking for granted, because we do, it's easy to take it for granted, but then you see how other people live in the world and you realize, oh man, I am blessed. I am blessed beyond measure. And so, yeah, well, I really appreciate you coming on, man. So thank you again.
Hey, thanks, Leonidas.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. To those listening, make sure you follow Corey on Twitter at Corey Proctor. That's CoreyProcter. And check out his website at CoreyProctor.com and support what he's doing. We need a lot more people who are willing to stand up and tell the truth. And I very much appreciate him for doing that. Thanks for listening. I'm Leonidas, and this has been Informed Dissent. If you would like to help support the show through donation, you can do so at donorbox.org/Leonidas. donorbox.org/Leonidas. I really appreciate that. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, give it a 5-star rating, share with your friends. Also, follow me on social media at Leonidas Johnson. And check out my website at leonidasjohnson.com. And always remember, do your own research, challenge everything. Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe. See you next week. God bless.